Good morning. Today, the 19th day of October 2018, I'm David Ellis with you up until 1:30 today, and I have a guest in the studio as well. That person is Reverend Guy Hewitt, former High Commissioner to London. We brought him here this morning, not necessarily to talk about Windrush. He's said quite a lot about that already, but there are other ideas. There's Brexit, to get a better understanding of exactly what is happening there and its possible implications for us here in Barbados. And he's also got some other ideas about Singapore and best practice and things that Barbados needs to look at, some areas that we need to look at if we want to really improve Barbados. And I suspect he might not even want to shy away from politics at some point. But this is your opportunity to share your views with him and to share them with me. We look forward to a stimulating day's program. But first to you, Reverend Hewitt, talk to us a little bit about the landscape that you see confronting Barbados at the moment. You've come out of England. England has been seen as a major financial capital over the years. And Barbados, too, has been fighting with its international financial sector. Well, what exactly are your concerns as you look at what has been happening in Britain?
Well, David, coming back to Barbados is wonderful. I tell people there's nowhere like home. I remember when I was in the UK, in a previous assignment, when I said to people, they say, where are you from? I say, Barbados. They say, well, what are you doing in London? People can't believe that we leave Barbados because to many people it is such a paradise. But we go because there are opportunities abroad, opportunities to serve, opportunities to learn, opportunities to network and create spaces for Barbados. The UK, as you said, is a major financial center, and they're going through their own challenges with Brexit. The repositioning or the exit of the United Kingdom from the European Union is expected to have an impact on the UK economy, on the European economy. And what they are trying to do is minimize that implication, especially for the financial service sector there, because it is the leading global financial service sector. While I was in the UK, I tried to see what were the possibilities or the opportunities to get some inward investment into Barbados. I think that there are a lot of opportunities that could be, or some strategic ones that could be pursued for Barbados. And I hope that as we see the contractions in Canada, that we could explore, and whomever succeeds me could explore that and develop that for the future.
And here in Barbados, we speak on a day when it is reported that a number of people are likely to go home today. Your thoughts on how those people can seek to confront the issues facing them?
First of all, my compassion with anybody who loses a job. My assignment in the UK after 4 years came to an end, and that was in a sense by mutual agreement. But I know how it feels, the psychological and financial impact of people not being in work. And first of all, I extend all support and prayers for people who find themselves in that situation or fear that they may be. And what we have to do now is to look and see what are the opportunities outside of the government sector to create employment. We keep talking about turning Barbados into an entrepreneurial hub, a lot of talk about innovation, a lot of discussion about liquidity in our financial system. We have to see how we can bring those things together so that people can get opportunities for employment.
Let's go to the telephone lines. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Oh, first out the blocks.
Yeah, well, is this Mr. Greenwich your guest?
Not Mr. Greenwich, this is Guy Hewitt. I know that you got Mr. Greenwich on your mind.
This is who?
This is Reverend Guy Hewitt.
This is the former ambassador to the United Nations, to UK.
Yes.
Okay. How are you doing, Mr. Hewitt?
I am well. I'm enjoying being back in Barbados, brother.
Yeah, well, I am sorry it's in Mr. Greenwich, but you will do a good job today. But I have a busy day, so I decide to move early, you know? Yeah. Mr. Ellis?
Yes, sir.
I don't want to steal the gentleman's show. He's there for a good time.
Yes, he's going to be here for the whole program. But so you can continue on the path that you wanted to pursue. There's no problem there.
You believe that you can manage it today, Mr. Ellis?
Well, I tried my best with you day after day. I mean, sometimes I fail because I can't understand how you can see the obvious, but...
Let me hear that one again.
I said, sometimes I fail because I can't understand how you can't see the obvious.
All right, I'll take that one. Don't mind quite pat up good, so I will take that one in my chest. Yeah. Now, Miss Ellis, I have a good few little issues, mainly with the media.
Sure, go ahead.
Now, I'm hearing daily Prime Minister, Mr. Greenwich, the two ministers of transport and work and things, and this $100 million investment where the road improvement is concerned. You following it?
I hear you. I'm listening to you.
Yeah. You have an idea how long ago this program was okay and contractors was already not contracted?
I don't have those details. So what I do know is that the Caribbean Development Bank had approved a lot of money for Barbados under the last administration and it wasn't drawn down. It is quite possible that because that money was there waiting at abeyance, that the administration has been able to get it more quickly than if it had applied for it since May 24th. But one of the weaknesses that was highlighted under the last administration was exactly that money which had been approved by multilateral agencies, we were not drawing down on it for one reason or the other.
Well, I will let you not to spin this one, because this one that I'm speaking about, even the contractor was selected before election.
And?
What I'm saying is, when I listen to the news media, you will hear a lot about the last decade. And most of these things was already, I ain't calling contractor name, but I believe the news media could call the contractor and say, and you will, the registration will know. And instead of someone plant lettuce and somebody can come and weep it, because to me what's going on is theft. Because when you hear the big, oh, this is going to do this and this, like if they have a part in it, this is an agreement that the Minister of Mr. Lashley and the Minister of Finance, that was finished long before election, Ms. Ellis. And I keep quiet because I said, well, the news media will come out and explain to the listeners that this is nothing that this government have done. This is something that was there before. But no, nobody is doing nothing to it. So I had to come out and put that the listeners would know this in the new nothing. And especially hearing about the last decade. Let me move on, Mr. Because there's a lot of things about that, but I wouldn't take up so much time delivering now. Let's go forward with this one. I'm told that four persons will be located in Bay Street to deal with the group of people that are going home. 1,500 to 2,500 people to see in the next couple of months. You hear about that office that is to be set up in Bay Street?
I saw something being circulated on social media. I don't know if this is indeed the setup that the government has proposed. Indeed, I was supposed to check with one of the people whose names have been called in connection with this. But I expect that the government will issue a formal statement and we will be able to distinguish what is fact and what is fake.
Well, why I bring it up, right? I believe, as I told Corey Lane on Wednesday, that there are people calling these stations that to me doing a better job than the advisors. And I heard a gentleman on lane three, I think it was the second or third corner, dealing with the disaster issue. And he had an outstanding idea. Something that I believe from the time those responsible in those areas should have called that gentleman and put what he mentioned in action. And I hope that when I finish with this, what I want to say to you now, that whoever is coming up with that 1958, early 60 idea about putting an office in their street to deal with persons going home, which at that time, a gentleman with the same name as the Prime Minister of Barbados was responsible for that 58, early 60 idea. Now we have 30 constituencies in Barbados. At the moment, the Barbados and they probably have 29 of them. And they have, the other one is half of the same Barbados Labour Party, because you don't leave a party just so and then, which is the opposition leader. In those 29 BRT constituencies, each candidate, each member, is given, I think, roughly $1,200 a month to have a location where persons in that constituency can come if they have problems or so.
Wait
at that same branch.
You're taking very long to get the cut to the chase, though.
No, I get in there. It's just something that need thinking about, and I want the Prime Minister.
What is your recommendation?
Well, I get in there. Also, at that branch house, there's a secretary that the taxpayers of our business pay for. There. Which you pay for the office space, house, whatever it is, and then they pay a secretary. On top of that, Miss Ellis, each minister, not representative, each minister has a person who works within that constituency for the minister that the taxpayers also pays. What I'm saying is this. If you have 30 constituencies around Barbados doing that, we want one office to look after 2,500 people.
So your recommendation would be that these 2,500 people should go to their individual constituency offices and seek to have whatever information that is required conveyed to those people. I thought that what you're ultimately seeking to do with this particular matter is that you want to identify the skill set, you want to identify what specific areas those people may be able to get training in, you want to identify whether they are coming from homes where they are the sole breadwinner. I mean, there's a whole set of stuff that the government must get, a lot of information the government must get from those people, if it is to be faithful to the idea of cushioning the impact on them. What sense would it make to have them scattered all over Barbados in 30 constituencies for that information then to be fed back to a central point? That don't make sense to me.
Miss Ellis.
Yes.
You stretched the conversation. I was moving on. I worked for years before I leave there in 91, 92. I came back and I continued at branch level. All that you just said, this happened at branches. I worked. But
let me get a view here from Reverend.
Yeah, let me finish and explain to you what I mean. When a person within a, let's say a person living in St. Lucie, is one that gets sent home. But before this gentleman was sent home, he was a carpenter. So he would like to go back into carpentry. And he come to the branch, which is Mr. Phillips in St. Lucie, go to Mr. Grant's secretary and explain to her, well, I was working in the government, but they laid me off. But now, you know, in the government for such a long time, I don't have the clients I had once, so I would like to find out if there's anything you know or anybody here wants something done. This is my name, bam, bam, bam. And I located here. So if you hear anything dealing with carpentry, I will know if you can help me.
Just hold on, man. You're taking too long to get to every point.
Just hold on a minute, please.
If
I can just interject, Dave, and I understand in a part of the sentiment which is saying, can we make the system more accessible? But, and while I appreciate that, one of the difficulties is that parliamentary representative and their constituency officers have a particular mandate. And the mandate, while they try to assist with employment, getting people attached, if it is seen that persons are being sent to a representative or representative's office, this which is now near exclusively of one party, there is going to be a perception of a lack of transparency, of partisanship. Furthermore, they would not in those offices have access to a database of employment opportunities, as you say, the ability to do the assessment of what the person's needs are, because they are not trained for that task. So while I hear the call to make it more accessible, I don't think that there is the option easily or simply of saying, go and see your MP. People will see their MPs when they have needs. But beyond that, I think systematically, the government cannot or would not want to use a parliamentary representative office for this task.
All right. Let's move on to another caller. Thank you very much. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Oh, I'd like to say luck on to Mr. Hewitt, and I'd like to say that I follow him with the Brexit work that he do in England. I think it was a fantastic job because I have family and friends at least here in the 60s, and so when I hear the things that they're the truth, that they're the truth in England, I'm just glad to hear that some of, well, not my family, that some of the rest of people was not get to send that one. And also, my concern also was for people who had this in the change that born there and is in the system, if their parents had come back home, you know, the standards for the disabled in England is quite high. So I congratulate you for the wonderful work you do and welcome back home. Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you very much. I do appreciate the vote of confidence. I mean, the work that we did, not just as the Barbados High Commission, but the High Commissions from within CARICOM, realized significant benefits for elderly West Indian migrants to the UK. We are working systematically, or I should say, the missions are working systematically with the UK government to regularize their status, and especially those children and of those the Windrush generation, to ensure that is their entitlement, the right to reside in the UK and to continue to call it home, remains a possibility.
A couple of things that, if you look at the newspaper today, are worth paying some attention to. One has to do with the Fair Trading Commission carrying out an investigation into the whole question of how Sol Barbados Limited was dealing with the 100-pound liquid petroleum gas cylinders. And it says that consumers had alleged that they made a prepayment for LPG cylinders prior to a legislated price increase. However, their cylinders were delivered after the price increases came into effect, and the consumers subsequently discovered that they were charged the difference between the price they paid and the increased price as per Sol's terms and conditions of service, which stated prices billed will be prices prevailing on the date of delivery. Now, the Fair Trading Commission has determined that this particular clause may be an unfair contract term and or misleading and or deceptive conduct, which is contrary to the Consumer Protection Act. And as a result, it has directed Saul to remove that particular contract term. And Saul has complied with the commission's request, but it has gone further and directed Saul to reimburse all customers who would have prepaid for an LPG gas cylinder, but were asked to pay an increase in price because of the contract term. So the question is how much money they have to pay back to these people who were in this position. And then there's also the concern about what's happening at on the South Coast yet again, Graham Hall, where we are seeing that residents are complaining about the foul stench coming out of the situation with respect to the sewerage project there and the mosquitoes. Certainly, everybody is watching to see how the government is dealing with this particular matter. Given all that was said when the Barbados Labour Party administration was in opposition. This is down to brass tacks. Hello.
Hello, good morning.
Yes, morning.
And to your guest.
Yes.
Hello?
Yes. Yeah.
Good morning.
Morning. CVC is run by the state, right?
Yes.
VOB is run privately. CVC happened to get money from the state. VOB don't. But still, VOB has been more successful than CVC. And you guys want to tell me why?
Well, I think that that speaks for itself. I mean, if you are running a media house as a private enterprise, then you have to be more in tune with what is happening out there in the market. And if you find yourself in a situation, for instance, where revenues are not as strong as they were before, the first thing that you're going to have to address is the expenditure. But if you're running a state-owned enterprise, the temptation is there for politicians to insist that you keep numbers high even though the market has changed. So that is a major factor that influences that. So in many state-owned enterprises, what can happen is you find that the wages bill is far higher than is realistic.
So another example, you can give a man $1 million. At the end of the day, he don't have a clue what went. Another man can give him, let's say, $250,000. At the end of the day, he can see what he has achieved. What I am basically saying is, these sending home of these people, nothing is going to change. So they can bring some examples. Pass by looking for MTW mechanical workshop. I have never seen so many direct vehicles in that front yard that I'm saying no. Transport board, operations, by Egan Friday driver already made. We have to look at our management system, and these institutions, the management system have failed throughout the years. And I think it's time enough. Some people might say that they're being politically victimized. That's their business, right? But you have to take a serious look at our managers. Slack management does breed great slack workers. If you have a tight management system in place, a slack worker will come to the fore and do what he or she is supposed to do because he knows that management ain't in place. It's as simple as that. You know, what I'm saying happening don't have to happen. And if we keep these slack managers in positions, nothing is going to change. They have to be dealt with. And that's my contribution for today.
Yeah. Any comment, Reverend? Yeah.
Well, I think one of the challenges we have to address in Barbados, and it's not just in the public sector, because when I speak to people in the private sector or the non-state sectors, there is a concern about this, one of them being the issue of productivity. How do we try to get all that we can out of persons? That people don't go to work just for the sake of being there, to draw a salary, but see it as an opportunity to give of their all. And that links back to the issue of accountability. How do we get employees at whatever levels, whether it's entry level, middle management, senior management, to ensure that they take responsibility for delivering what is assigned to them? And in the absence of clear systems of accountability, it's very difficult to get the return on investment that you make in terms of your human resources.
We also have some comments here by Crystal Drakes, the opposition senator. She says the plan to fix Barbados' economy is far more austere than it is transformative. This economist is saying that the BERT program is going to pull about $1 billion out of the economy and could lead to increased inequality and more pockets of poverty in Barbados. And she goes on to say that when you analyze the situation, Barbados faced a monumental task over the next 4 years. And this too is worth discussing on today's edition of Down to Brass Tacks, because we have to deal with all the views that people present out there. If we are going to try to improve the situation and bring people along, we cannot just be one-sided in the way that we look at what confronts us. So divergent perspective is really welcome. Hello? Down to Brass Tacks. Hello. You're on the air?
Sam, hello.
You're on the air.
Yes. I just called to put in my 2 cents worth as an ordinary Barbadian citizen.
Yes.
In respect of this laying off.
Mm-hmm.
I know that so long as a country, or you can guide me if I'm wrong, if a country enter an AMF program, the first order the day would be to lay off. That's what the AMF requires, right? But I am still seeing, or I still see that there's situations where, let me say, people that at 62, 63, that would have already had in their time or got in their time and this just playing the air to go down to 65. Could it be a situation where you can, like, call in these people, search out these people, and bring up the 2 years, the 2 more years to work, bring up the 2 years, get the gratuity, and send them home at a reduced pension? Couldn't it be done like that? I am sure there are people that really, really, really want to go, but they're just playing for the time.
Ma'am, if I can, Guy Hewitt here, one of the things in a IMF or in a structural adjustment program, there is a demand for the government to cut its expenditure. So while the usually salaries and wages are the major component of government expenditure, the reduction can be done in a number of ways. We will recall in the 90s that the Barbados, the government took a decision, rather than laying off people, to reduce salaries by the 8%.
10%.
That is no longer constitutionally an option. Early retirement is another option, as you are suggesting. Voluntary redundancy, laying off. There are a number of options. And what you are speaking to is whether you can get a combination of those to provide what is the optimal way of dealing with this. Laying off is always difficult. Nobody wants to go through that trauma. I don't think any government wants to inflict it on people. But it is a question of looking at what are the options and what mix of them you can do.
Well, I understand you and I respect that. And I know that it's a bitter pill to swallow, don't matter how we try to take it, how much water we take. And I don't think that no government would deliberately want to send home people, notwithstanding that government's normally sending people and overburden the public sector. However, I'm saying if since that is an option, and if a person had gone forward, would their time be added? Like, if I have 2 more years, could I say that I would take an offer of getting my 2 years come up and with my gratuity as a reduced pension, and would that work?
Those are options. The government has at its disposal the ability to negotiate with workers through the unions, through the whether it be NUPW or statutory bodies, through the other unions, to see what they and their members would be willing to accept.
Okay.
They want, and so they are pursuing, I suspect, all of the options. We wait to see what else comes. But as Mr. Ellis raised earlier, one of the things that we have to look at is how we can create a growth strategy for the economy. How do we identify new sectors or expand existing economic sectors to ensure that it is the growth in revenue that can be used to supplement government expenditure rather than the imposition of additional taxes?
There's another dimension to it, though, and it has to do with ultimately you want to keep some of your better workers, and that is not something that is restricted to age. So you've got to be very careful that in the process, you do not kick out people who can really bring value to the table. In addition to that, though, you have a situation where there is also a kind of restructuring taking place. You see this discussion about stenotypists? This is about a category of worker that has essentially been phased out to a large extent in the private sector. And it was phased out in the private sector. Part of it was because of downsizing, but another major part of it has been the growth in technology, where you can go to your computer these days, you can draft your own correspondence, you can save it, you can send it via email. You no longer needed to have some of those people around. So if you're going to try to create a process of retraining and retooling, these are among the first people that you might want to look at to go in that particular direction. Painful as it is, yes, but it is dangerous for us to try to hold on to certain categories of workers that when you look competitively at what other countries are doing, they have already taken it one step further. If you can get those people to take on new skills that are more in keeping with today's reality, then that's what you do. So that's another dimension to it.